You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast recommends... Podcasts we love.
Changemakers is a new podcast series with me, Claire McKenna, talking to people who stand up, speak out, or challenge us to think a little differently.
It's about the greater good, families and children, respecting their own individuality.
In the next couple of years, like, I hope I never have to have conversations about racism ever again. Like, I just want to get to the stage where, you know, people are just people.
Nobody's pooling the resources together and actually being able to show how much of an impact it will make when people do come together.
Changemakers with Claire McKenna. Search for it now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast is home to the world's best podcasts, including the David McWilliams podcast, I'm Grandmam, and the one you're listening to right now.
Welcome to the Blood and Mud podcast, everybody. The podcast that still doesn't have any gravel.
Really? Wow.
A week later, I'm still sans gravel, as they say in the Dordogne.
That is terrible service.
I'll tell you what, there's a big row going on, but well. But, you know, I think the saddest thing was not having anywhere to drive in my steamroller, Josh, I think.
That's exactly. What is a steamroller if you've nothing to roll?
Yeah. It's
a shit motorbike.
A crap motorbike, yeah, with wide wheels that goes way too slow. I did have a go on a steamroller, obviously.
Obviously.
I mean, it very loudly beeped every time you put it in reverse, which was very annoying, let me tell you.
Especially if, you know, you're feeling slightly self-conscious having, you know, a mini steamroller with nothing to roll. The last thing you need is for it to beep every time.
Big yellow light flashing on it. And everyone's going, why is he doing that? What's wrong with him?
Do you know what's even worse than the beeping, though, is those ones where it actually tells you that this vehicle is reversing. I hate that so much.
Like, but that's a comment, because that kind of goes, vehicle is reversing.
This vehicle is reversing. Yeah, it's like, really? Do you need both? Could you not just have, is the beep not sign enough that somebody should be aware that you have to sort of...
Should have played that on Leicester's last scrum on Saturday, shouldn't they? I'm back, everyone.
We'll come back. We'll come to that later.
Right then, yeah. So I was away last week as well. Under the gravel, then I was away to Yorkshire. Worst things. There's worse places to go. People tell me.
People say, oh, Yorkshire, lovely. But, you know, I know there's politics there.
So I went to Haworth. I went to the Bronte Museum.
Oh, very nice.
Which was genuinely interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. Bronte, Dad Bronte.
Mm-hmm.
Outlived his wife and all six of his kids.
I mean...
And he was a vicar. He must have been significantly asking a few questions, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have words, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would be saying, wouldn't you? You'd be shaking your fist.
A full and frank conversation.
The crucifix.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interesting stuff. And I just, and there were like six Bronte kids. I don't know the three women, obviously. Mm. They wrote all the books and that. And there was a lad who an alcoholic who died.
Then didn't was, he like he liked a bit of smack as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he was everything. He was the typical artist type, wasn't he? I think. Yeah. Bless him. Died at 30. Then there's another two. And I said, and he was a painter, Bramwell, wasn't he? And I said to my sister, I said, well, I've heard of these other two. What do these other two do? Were they like the thick ones? They didn't produce anything. I said, yeah, they both died by the time they were 10. Well, didn't I feel the shit?
Low achievers, clearly. Exactly.
Well, that's not so. I think Emily wrote Wuthering Heights when she was about 12, didn't she, or something?
I tell you what, mind. Like, how many... Like, weren't they all tuberculosis?
Yeah, and...
It's like, fair play, you know, a testament to the sort of good power of vaccinations right
yeah.
there.
Apart from Bramwell, who drank himself to death. But yeah, the others were all TB, yeah.
I just checked. Oh, no, he developed tuberculosis.
Oh, right.
Because he was a massive fucking drunken skaghead, so his, his immune system
I mean, it was a good
brilliant.
Chance a clean living would get you TB, even in
Indeed.
Those days.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, yeah. But honestly, like...
But like Anne Bronte had the TB and took herself to Scarborough because she said, I think the sea air might do me some good.
Didn't.
Died in Scarborough. And Charlotte, who was still alive, I think she outlived, she was the old last one to die. She said, well, I'll just bury her here because I can't take her back to Haworth and put my dad through another funeral. It's just, I just can't do it.
I mean
we're laughing, but it's terrible, isn't it?
I mean, it's fair. It's funny because it's awful.
Yeah. What else are you going to do but laugh with incredulity at it? But yeah, it was interesting, and Howard's lovely, you know, out on the Dales and all that, I guess. And then I went to Harrogate, which is like really posh Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah. It's the sort of the Brecon of the Dales.
Kind of. Well, it's a spa town, isn't it?
Mm.
Like Bath. And I was like, well, why does that make it so rich? I don't understand why... But it's because apparently in like about 1800, that's like Tony Collins here, don't I? But about 1800, basically loads of really sickly, loaded people moved there thinking that drinking sulfur water would somehow make them better.
Sort them out, yeah.
I mean, imagine what that must taste like, by the way. Do you want a glass of water? Yeah, why does it smell of eggs and matches? I don't understand.
Just drink it, it's good for you.
Exactly.
What is it about Victorian medicine that was just convinced that things that were fucking horrendous were going to make you better? It's like, I don't know, we'll drill a hole in your skull or we'll make you drink some rank shit.
Or missing really obvious stuff. Like, you know, yeah. So, well, do you think maybe that'd be something to do with the water? No. It's because the air smells a bit. Miasma. Yeah, but this water's got fish bits floating in it that we're all drinking out of. You know what I mean? You think that might be the problem? No. That's a ridiculous idea.
Well, it was that person who I think it was during, like, the sort of lull between lockdowns 1 and 2. Somebody decided to have a sort of anti-lockdowny social distancing protest thing by diving into the Roman baths when they were briefly reopened in Bath. And everyone was like, oh, God, no, don't do that. That water, you can't swim in that water. It's got all sorts of horrendous, like, fucking microbes living in it that will give you horrendous, fatal, incurable diseases. Please come out immediately. And it's like, yeah, people come from miles around to take this shit.
Is that people up in Snowdonia? They go, look how crystal clear this mountain stream is. And like, supper, it's like, that's full of heavy metals.
Yeah.
You're basically going to rot your organs if you keep doing that.
Yeah. And also, there's also a dead sheep in that river. Yes. Half a mile.
Yes. So
yes. Yeah, anyway,
spa towns.
Yeah,
but very nice. Very
lovely
nice.
Places.
I do love that the Grade One listed building, the old baths in Harrogate. Is Harrogate? Guess what it is now.
Is it a rare? It's a Wetherspoons.
It's a Wetherspoons.
Yes. Come on.
Of course, it's a Wetherspoons.
Oh, I thought it was a bit sort of the bath to turn. Most of the old Victorian Roman baths into a sort of tea room and fancy restaurant, but Harrogate have really, they've one-upped them there.
I went to Betty's Tea Room, the famous Betty's Tea Room, where the service and the experience is so nice, you even kind of don't get fucking enraged at the fact you've just paid £40 for a butty and a pot of tea. For two, to be fair. For two. But,
still.
Still. So, yeah, that was me. What did you do last week apart from do a podcast, which I wasn't on?
Yeah, I did a podcast. Didn't do a lot, really. It's kind of, the weather was nice. Sort of had a couple of barbecues, tried out my new barbecue pizza oven.
Oh, yeah. Hang on, whoa. Which okay. was a... So what, you put the coals in the bottom?
Coals, put the barbecue, you know, heat the barbecue as normal, and then I've got this firebox thing that goes on top of the barbecue on the grill, and then it heats up and around. It's got a little thermostat.
So it's
on
an additional insert to go in your barbecue?
On, it goes atop the barbecue.
Oh, okay. So it's not like an all-in-one unit.
No, yeah, you need it's sort a, of, it just, you, it, you it just need drops a
barbecue
onto
to make it work.
Yeah, any standard sort of large kettle barbecue would do the job, you know, and just drop it on there. And it was all right. It did a decent enough job, I'd say. It was absolutely not worth the hassle compared to just going and getting a pizza. But it was an experiment.
I've made the mistake of not realising that something wasn't something. You know, like you think you buy a full pizza oven, then it's just, it's not that. When I was a child and I wanted a Commodore 64, big style, and my parents couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And I looked like covered, I just kept staring longingly at it in the Grattan's catalogue.
I hadn't
reached the point in my male young life where I looked at different parts of the Grattan's catalogue. This was when I was younger, I was just looking at the computer. Of course, now the computer provides things you would normally get in the Grattan's catalogue for today's generation.
And far more than the Grattan's catalogue ever revealed to us.
Yeah, so imagine if that was in the Grattan's catalogue. Good Lord.
I mean, it would still be going now.
It'd be quite a few pages longer as well,
Much longer.
So, yeah, so I was looking and I went, look, Mum, I found a Commodore 64 for £75. And she went... And she looked at it, and I was like, full of hope. And it was a picture of a Commodore 64 on a computer table that was £75. Crestfallen. I got a second-hand 28K Spectrum in the end that Christmas.
I got a ZX Spectrum X2, which
was
at
that
the
big grey one with the built-in tape deck.
It was the big one with the tape deck and the light gun. But I got that in about, it must have been 1991. So by that point, things had moved on, you know.
I got a Master System instead of a Mega Drive. This is why I'm so enraged at privilege now, Josh. It's deep.
I don't think I got a console when everyone else had a console until the Nintendo 64, which was 1997 or something.
So I've been to Yorkshire, but I don't want this to become a two Yorkshireman sketch. So let's... So if people want to get in touch with us and tell us where you've been disappointed with computer hardware.
Indeed,
or what
please
was
do.
Or wasn't in the Grattan's catalogue.
Damn right.
You can get in touch with me at Blood and Mud or late at bloodandmud.com. And how do people get in touch with you, Josh?
At Josh Gardner, at Rocked_Mag.
How's that going?
Somebody tweeted a popular viral tweet that I'd tweeted last week to us this week, which shows that, if anything, my brand saturation is really not going as I'd hoped.
I properly giggled for about 2 minutes.
It did make me laugh.
To you, your own tweet, to say this is what for you.
It's like, this whole sort of attempt to swivel the brand but still maintain its sort of core audience is just
It's what you've got to call the Cardiff Blues problem.
Yeah, indeed.
But I'm assuming you talked about that last week because it was a fucking brilliant clip. I'm assuming you talked about that last week.
Wasn't it? We did talk about it, yeah. What a fucking...
It's the way he goes past the camera at the end.
Yeah, it's the way and looks right down the fucking barrel, right, as he drives past.
Yeah.
I know.
So anyway, we're on Acast, we're on Apple, and we're on anywhere you can find podcasts, really. We're also on patreon.com/ Blood and Mud, where you can come on and get some extra stuff and all of that malarkey.
It costs you
£2 a month or £20 a year to get extra episodes. You'll get extra Lions episodes as well when that kicks off. It's taken a long time to arrive, this Lions tour. Well, I mean, we'll talk about that later, but honestly...
It's the anti-Euros, right? Because Euro 2020, as it's weirdly still is, even though it's 2021... Yes. Starts on Sunday, and I cannot remember a less hyped international tournament.
It actually starts Friday.
It's Friday.
That's how little hype it's received. Exactly. In your mind, anyway.
It's because it's not in a country. It's just like the most low key sort of like, oh, I suppose this is happening thing that I can remember.
It's not in the country, but like 7 of the 8 knockout games are in Wembley.
Yeah.
Very strange.
And yet for some reason, yeah, and then compare that to the Lions, which it feels like people started getting on the hype train about in September.
I've printed off the fixture list here, which I'm showing to you, but as you can see,
yeah.
I've dropped it, run over it with my roller seat by accident. It's covered in stains. And that's just kind of how long I've been waiting. This is symptomatic. It's been trampled underfoot, and we're still 3 weeks away from the fucker kicking off.
Yeah,
and it's not even kicking off really properly until the third. That's when the actual tour starts, in my mind.
Yeah, and really, when's the first test? Like, end of July?
I'll tell you now, on my trampled list here. The first test is the 24th of July.
It's the 7th of June as we record today. It's like, we are a long way out from the first test.
But
still.
When it arrives, if you are a patron,
so fucking
you're
going to
get so much extra stuff and treats from us. So it's £2 a month, or it's £5 a month, or £50 a year if you want to join the VIP. Thank you very much to Dylan Asbury, who's joined the VIP this week.
Well done.
I've got Dylan, as he gets a lot. He gets the dubious pleasure of having us do a bio of him, which is me this week. I've got Dylan Asbury as a fullback who played 22 times for Scotland in the 90s and 2000s. He became celeb mag fodder at that time due to his on-off relationship with Carol Smiley from Changing Rooms.
Oh, that's a deep pull, but I love it.
After a time out of the limelight, he broke 11 bones on ITV's The Jump after another contestant landed on him.
I was thinking about The Jump the other day. Wasn't Channel 4 The Jump, and ITV was the diving one, which was equally dangerous, but in a different way.
Yes. I mean, to be fair, you've got to have some minerals to go and do a ski
Genuinely,
jump, haven't you?
Anyone that ever did that, The Jump, is fucking brave, in my opinion. Even though some of the jumps look shit.
Because yeah, they look like, from where we are.
From where, yeah. Compared to the sort of ski jumping that you're normally used to seeing, you sort of went, oh, that's crap.
You get to the top of a roller coaster, clickety-clack, going up.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the top and you think, oh my fucking God, how's this high? And now I can't get off. So I've just got to live with it.
Yeah.
Ski jumping, you walk that high, sit down, and have to make a conscious decision to still go through with it.
This is happening. This is why I genuinely think, you know, for all of the fact that he was a sort of ridiculous character of fun, Eddie the Eagle remains an unbelievably fucking brave lunatic.
Oh, yeah.
To just go, I haven't done this before. I'm going to attempt to do it at the motherfucking Olympics. It's yeah, sure.
Have you seen that film with Taron Egerton playing?
No, I haven't.
I mean, it's as you'd expect.
You know,
he had to fight against the horrible people at the IOC, the British.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
And all that. And his dad hated what he was doing and had no time for it. But I had an interview with him afterwards and he said, yeah, that's not what my dad was like at all. My dad was like really lovely and supportive, but they wrote him like that, you know, for the drama. I was like, how much fucking money have they given you?
Yeah.
For you to let the whole world think that your dad thought you were a twat. Yeah, thought you were a twat and in turn was a twat himself.
I mean, fair play to him. Like, yeah, there must be a lot of cash. How much to publicly tarnish the good name of your presumably dead dad?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm not signing off on this anymore. Not going to say that about my dad. Another 50 grand? Yeah, go on.
It's what he would have wanted.
So, thank you very much, Dylan. Thanks for everybody who joins the patreon.com/bloodandmud. And you can sign up there.
Hell yeah.
That very address. Sidle up to the turnstile, slip your money across, come on in, get nice shown directly to the beautiful lounge where we all will sit. We will converse. And there is a virtual lounge, of course, because we've got a Facebook group which is private. I've had to repel a couple of people this week who were trying to get in without answering the question correctly. And you only get the answer to the question when you sign up. So thank you very much, everybody. You also get the full episodes, which you won't get if you're not.
Indeed. It's very true.
Now then, shall we move forward and begin as we always begin with a player spotted? Mary Anstruther gets in touch on the patron messaging because she's a lovely patron. Thank you very much, Mary. She says, hi, just a wee note to start the weekend. A player spotted. This is maybe too pedestrian, she says. It's just every day, but I've now spotted a Roney sow twice this week on my way back from work.
Brilliant.
I cycle to and from work via a bike path that has an exit not too far from Murrayfield. Twice this week, I have passed Edinburgh's Roney sow in full Edinburgh gear on a blue bike. Mary apologises and says, I'm very sorry, we cycle past each other too fast for me to see what type or make of bike. I imagine he was on his way back from his day at Murrayfield, she says. And she signed off with a smiley face emoji.
I mean, it's nice that he's, you know, he's just cycling, you know? Like, he's not in a big car or anything.
No, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not in that all that Scottish money.
No.
Go to his head. He's on his bike.
Tell you what,
blue bike.
I very nearly would have had an extremely mundane player spotted last week, but it sadly didn't pan out.
That's it. A really boring one that didn't even happen.
It didn't
even
happen,
better.
Indeed. Well, as I said on the pod last week, I took a delivery last week of a new cross trainer from our friends at Dom at Equip for Gyms. And
they're good lads, polite
good
lads.
Lad.
Nice lads.
Lovely man. He mentioned that, you know, they've done very, you know, they've clearly done very well since lockdown.
I can imagine.
But he mentioned that he... in addition to having, you know, like sort of sending stuff out on big lorry, like big sort of like freight lorries, they've also got like a variety of sort of medium sized delivery lorries. And one of the big strong lads that he has to, you know, cart this gym equipment around on deliveries for him is Rangi Chase.
No.
as in the fucking former
Salford Red Devil scrum half, Rangi Chase.
Yes, the former England and most recently West Wales Raiders standoff and scrum half, Rangi Chase. He's on the van for him now, apparently. And he was he emailed me in the morning and was like, oh, Rangi called in sick today, so he's running there and a bit late. And I was like, oh, what? I nearly got my cross trainer delivered by Rangi Chase.
You could
what
have had
story
that in a Facebook group, but haven't
I know.
So,
anyway,
do they deliver gravel at all?
I don't know. I'll ask him. He's very, accommodating.
He's rang up for any gravel delivery.
He's got the quads for it.
That's why we're being awkward, you see.
Yeah, I see.
Cotswold self-binding gravel, if anyone's out there. If you've got 20 tonnes of it lying around you don't want, that can be delivered quickly, let me know.
Your arm off, yeah. That mini steamroller is quite literally wearing a hole on your drive. Waiting.
It had to be picked up the day after. I was almost crying, almost a perfectly formed tear rolled down my cheek, thinking it hadn't managed to fulfil its purpose.
Awful.
You can fill steamrollers up with water. Did you know that? There's a 20-gallon water tank on it, and you press a button with your foot, and it drops water onto the rollers to compact things even better.
Okay.
They've thought of everything.
That's fucking genius.
You know, if you had gravel, it'd be fucking brilliant too. But
It's a big old if there.
It is a big old if,
as you've proven
I discovered
in the last week.
Yeah, you wouldn't
indeed.
Have thought so, but yeah.
No.
Right then. I could have started naming and shaming the company and using my, you know, my gigantic Twitter following.
You could have.
But, you know, you don't ever go full Mike, do you? On these things.
Bless There's him. A line that you've got
you
to draw.
You don't go Mike versus Samsung, do you?
Look, all I'm saying is he got his TV sorted.
Well, yeah.
Who's
the mug? I've got no gravel. Yeah. He's luxuriating in a working 70-inch television or something.
Exactly. Who's really winning here?
Now then, shall we do some news? Thank you for that. Sorry, Mary. Player spotted.
Yes.
If you have a player spotted. I do like, Mary, you thought it was too pedestrian. That was so boring.
No.
It was perfect.
That was perfect.
Perfect.
Absolutely. Oof.
So if you've got a bit of that going on, then you can get in touch with us. We're at Blood and Mud on the DMs or Lee at bloodandmud.com or, of course, like Mary, the Patreon messaging service. Now we'll do some news.
Indeed.
Kick me off, Josh. News.
England have brought in yet another pair of sacrificial lambs, I mean assistant coaches, for the summer series. Jersey's Ed Robinson will work with the backs while...
Who was involved during the Six Nations...
Yeah,
that I didn't know about. But.
No, and former Ealing coach Alex Codling will work with the forwards. Simon Amor, of course, and Jason Royals both were let go / left / were thrown on the bonfire of Eddie's failures. After the Six Nations in the review, of course. You do have to wonder if working with Eddie Jones is a uniquely unpleasant experience, don't you? At the sort of the
I can't
rate
work out if people just go, I'm not putting up with this and I'm off. Or yeah. he just sacks people every
yeah.
month.
One way or another. Think about this, right? Because like Warren Gatland, right? 11 years with Wales. And the only thing that ever changed about his entire backroom setup was when Adam Beard Sr. went to go off and do the Cleveland fucking Browns, which is fair enough. And then Bobby Sridgen came in. Yeah. But like, unless, but Eddie doesn't have a single coach left now from when he took over, which was only, let's not forget, was only 5 years ago. It feels like a long time, but it was only 5 years ago. And I mean, the only person who seems to be able to tolerate Eddie for more than about a year is John Mitchell, who we know is verifiably a total arsehole. So
that's very true.
I mean, he's got to have a certain brand of dick.
They said Alex Codling was an ex-England international. And I was like, I don't have a fucking Chitty Scooby fucking who this guy is. And then so I thought I'd look him up. One cap in 2002 versus on a summer tour to Argentina in Buenos Aires. He played lock.
Yeah, you look at his... I tell you what, he's got a... In terms of a sort of journeyman rating, Wasps, Blackheath, Richmond, Neath, Harlequins, Saracens, Bedford, Northampton, Ebervale, Montpellier, London Welsh, Cardiff. And then he coached Ebervale, London Welsh, Cardiff, London Scottish and Rotherham. I mean, that's
and now he's an England coach.
Yeah, 47 years old.
So England are playing the USA, are they?
And Canada, yeah.
And then there's an England A fixture against Scotland A.
Yes.
I mean, you know we've said about Eddie Jones is a bit bored.
Yeah.
Imagine how fucking bored he is.
He
will be like, I don't want to be fucking playing these people. I don't want this squad because all the good ones aren't here. And I've got these fucking coaches that I've just called in for fucking banter reasons.
I'm just going to let them do it, to be honest, because... I can't. Yes. I mean, he basically said as much last week when he sort of said that, like, you know, he only, you know, being an England coach only takes up 12 weeks of his year. And the rest of the time, he's got to have something to do. That's why he has seven other coaching jobs in about four different hemispheres. You know, he is nakedly just going, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want until they sack me.
No, but I went on the radio before the 2015 World Cup. Mm. I did Dotton Adebayo's Up All Night program. He was doing an all-night World Cup, Rugby World Cup preview. And he brought in a fan from each nation into this big room. And I was the kind of journo, whatever, guy who knew a bit more about it. He kept throwing questions to me. And he said, you'll be on for about an hour and it's this much money. I said, that's all right then. I think it was 180 quid or something. And they said, and we'll pay for you to get here. So, well, I'll drive anyway. It's not a problem. And then I got there. And then he said, yeah, basically, we're running the show all night. So you'll be on all night. I was like, hang on a minute. I didn't agree 180 quid for a fucking night shift. didn't even get shift allowance or anything. And anyway, my point is, I thought somebody said, oh, it's amazing. You're going on 5 Live. That's incredible. I was like, yeah, for the fucking Saturday night all night slot. How many people have they asked before it's got to me? And I think it's good because I'm going on the BBC. I've got this feeling about this coaching pairing. How many people did they ask before they got to the bloke who works at Jersey Reds and the unknown lock from 2002?
Yeah, it's... You've got to wonder. with the turnover of coaches, he's running out of coaches that he can hire. And also, yeah, what decent coach is going to want to be involved with the England setup, given we know how A, prescriptive Eddie is, and B, like, clearly everybody, they're not long for this world. If you're like, you know, a coach of a Premiership club, if you're Alex Sanderson, say, are you really going to want to sort of, you know, go, oh yeah, I'll take time off from Sale pre-season to sort of go and do this? Like, fuck off, will you?
We're very pleased to have Alex and Ed join in the summer, Jones said.
Mm-hmm.
They will provide a hands-on coaching skill in attacking the war form and fundamental younger development squad. I love that. They will provide the hand-on skills in coaching and attack to a young and developing squad. That bit says, I'm not going to be there. So basically, they will do all the work. Because I will be having a lie-in, binge-watching shit in my room.
Yeah, no, it is a man that basically wants to be sacked and is going to go, how badly do I have to take the piss before
they give
somebody
me the check.
Just pulls the trigger and gives me my massive fucking check.
Someone gives me the full Sven Goran Eriksson treatment. This is not working out. Here's 12 million quid to fuck off.
That'd be fair play, you know?
Yeah, so that's that bit of news. Siali Piatow is leaving Bristol.
Yes, which is a shame, I think. He's been, to be honest with you, a really good player for Bristol, a much better player than I think anybody expected he would be.
And because not out injured as much as Charles either.
No. Yeah, like, I think when he
signed...
Not
that Charles can you know, do anything about that. You know, he got injured, but...
But yeah, he's been a really, you know, I think when he was signed, most people just accept, you know, basically assumed that it was a way of paying the Piatow family more money than they could get away with paying him by, you know, hiring his brother as well. But no, Siali's been really good for Bristol, you know, as a sort of dependable, rock solid, hard inside centre. Only 35, still a lot of rugby left in him, he thinks. It's quite
seven
surprising.
7 years left in him, like CJ Stander. I think I've got 7 years left in me.
I mean, actually, speaking of, sorry to change the subject, but speaking of CJ Stander, have you seen this fucking monster thing?
No.
Well, allow me to avail you of something quite horrendous that Munster posted. I mean, so player update from Munster. About half an hour ago, as we record. Following an accident over the weekend, the below player update has been issued by Munster Rugby Medical Department. Mike Haley, CJ Stander, Damien Diolande and RG Snyman required treatment for superficial burns following a fire pit accident at the weekend. It is expected that Haley and Stander, who sustained burns to their hands, may return to training this week with availability for Friday night's game reviews of the week progresses. Diolande and Snyman, however, sustained more substantial burns to legs, hands and face and will not take part in their respective training and rehabilitation programmes and will meet specialists again later this week. I mean, fucking hell.
Jesus Christ.
Like,
they're meant to know what they're doing with Bryce, that lot.
I know. And also, what? Like, we've all seen a fire pit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
did they start giving it that walking across hot coal shit after a few drinks?
I really hope not. But like, obviously horrible and, you know, speedy recovery to all of them. And I hope that Damien Diolande's incredibly handsome face is all right. But like...
I mean, what's Snyman up to? He's only just getting his creature back on track. And he decides to pour a load of charcoal over himself of a Saturday night.
Yeah, it's not like a fire pit is like a sort of, you know, it's not like a fireworks accident, is it?
It's a fairly static bit of kit, isn't it?
How destructive can a fire pit be? Like, apparently very. Enough to injure four people. So, yeah, fucking hell.
I'd love to know what the story of that. Somebody's going to have a video of that. It's got to surface at some point.
It's going to be doing the rounds on WhatsApp by the end of the week, let's face it. But yeah, and also, you know, put CJ Stander's last ever Munster appearance at risk as well, which would be a hell of a way to go out.
He's back. He's one of the less injured ones.
He is.
He's
only burnt his hands, which are, of course, not important for playing rugby union.
In the Limerick inferno that happened in somebody's back garden at the weekend.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's Siali Piatow.
Yeah. Speaking of Springboks, in the Diolande, RG Snyman kind of way.
Yeah, it's I see what you're doing. It was very professional.
They've named their squad 46 men in that squad, which is
a
hell of a...
They're whittling it down to 36, aren't they, eventually?
I think so, yeah. They've got four scrum halves in there and two fly halves and Elton Yantis. all the good lads you'd expect are in there. Colby, Villy LaRue,
22 stone, Franz Steen, still in there.
Somehow Franz Steen is still there. Jesse Creel, Damien Dialende. You know, it's a fucking good squad. And obviously, we don't even need to talk about the forwards because the forwards are the forwards. You know, loose forwards like Dan Dupria, Steph Detoy, Khaleesi, Elstad, Quagga-Smith, Dwayne Vermeulen, obviously got injured at the weekend, Jasper Visa, Jan-Luc Dupria. It's just a monstrous load of back rows.
It's bang out of order, really.
It's unacceptable. Yeah, one country should not be able to put together, you know, four countries could barely put together a half-decent test squad for this Lions tour, and here we have just one South Africa just making everybody else look very silly, in my opinion.
Yeah, so they've got to knock the 10 shit ones, have got to go out of that squad.
In an interesting blow to what's left, the withered fucking appendage of, you know, what's left of the Rainbow Cup's credibility, which is basically a hand after a firework accident. Razia Erasmus has decided that none of the players named in that 46-strong squad are allowed to travel to Europe for the Rainbow Cup finale.
Incredible. I mean, nobody ever saw that coming. I mean,
it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, so the Bulls are currently all right. That would be fine because the Bulls have only got like 3 or 4 players in the squad. But if the Sharks, who, if they beat the Bulls on the weekend, top the table, 8 of their first 15... will not be allowed to go to Italy to play Benetton in the final, which is ultimately the perfect end for this extremely silly tournament.
The new unbeatable Benetton.
Yeah.
The club formerly known as Benetton that we just don't recognise anymore. So yeah, speaking of squads, Wales have got a squad out, haven't they?
They have. Josh Turnbull's in, which has caused Blues Twitter brainworm sufferers to just throw out some absolute scorching takes about a 33-year-old player, who, to be fair to him, has been a bright spark in a Blues team that finished in the bottom half of their conference in the Pro 14 and have played okay in the Rainbow Cup. I mean, I don't have the energy to do anything else but point out that
I wanted it to be like a real big hype man announcing his name or something. It would have been fucking hilarious. Next up, Cardiff Lock! Josh Turnbull!
It's just like...
Some
of the stuff that I've... Well, you think he's a do-anything man. He'll play lock, he'll play blindside, he'll play number 8, he'll play 7.
Yeah.
He won't play at all. That's my preferred position for him.
Everywhere he plays will be slightly underpowered and underpaced. You know, it's wonderful.
I mean, it's just like... Some of the stuff that I've read on Twitter today has just made me like...
I know, I'm pleased for him. It's nice him to play for his country again. You know, it is at 33. You probably never thought it was coming again. I wouldn't have thought.
No, I absolutely shouldn't
and
have.
And good for him, and I hope he's very happy. However, let's not pretend this isn't anything other than what it is.
Wayne Pivac had described it as very similar to the Dan Lydiate situation, which is an absolute fucking disgraceful slur on the 60-cap Lion.
Doesn't it just show you Dan how Lydiate fucked up the Welsh media is? There's somebody to put their hand up and go, can you please explain what the fucking hell you're banging on about with statements like that, Wayne?
Yeah, and also, none of Wales's blindside flankers were fit when Dan Lydiate was called up. That's why he had to start. Also, I say again, Dan Lydiate's got 60 caps for Wales and has been on, is it 1 or 2 Lions tours? I think it's maybe just 1. And a former Six Nations player of the tournament, don't forget, and a double Grand Slam winner. But still, him and Josh Turnbull basically the same. 10 caps in a 15-year career.
However,
fair fucks to him. I mean, just... Yeah, I just can't get with this. People compared him to the Beast earlier, saying, oh, you know, the Beast, you know, South Africa took the Beast to the Rugby World Cup when he was in his 30s and he was really good. It's like, yeah, the Beast is one of the best tight end props of the last fucking 20 years. That's why.
Who was comparing him to 10 Diamond Tarawera? How does that even start?
I genuinely don't know. Like I said, it's brainworms. It is brainworms.
I mean, you know, it's like Josh Jones, you know, it's like that Michael Jones thing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? No.
I mean, yeah, it's the fact that Simon Thomases of this world are saying that he's the best, he's been the best player in the Rainbow Cup this season, which shows how little rugby he watches outside of the games he's illegally sneaked into. But like,
and think about that as a bit of fucking faint praise, by the way. You've been the best player in the Rainbow Cup.
And also, demonstrably hasn't, because there's a team called Benetton that have won all their fucking games. I think one of their players might be quite good.
At the Newport Sevens gigantic piss-up weekend.
It's, and again, I'm not, you know, he's fair, he has been really good for the Blues this season, much better than the bag of organs that he was previously.
Which is probably overstated, but it's funny. So that's why
it's funny. But he was witheringly average for at least, you know, 13 of his 15 years as a professional rugby player. He's playing very, very well at the moment. I don't begrudge him the cap. I think it's utterly pointless because he'll be 35 at the next World Cup. And Pivak said that this is the last chance that they'll get to look at some fringe players before that tournament. And it's like, okay, so do you want to pick any one of the myriad young flankers that you might want to have a look at who might actually be able to contribute something in 2 years' time? No? Okay, fine. Anyway.
That's... They talk about effect. They talk about presence off the pitch, don't they? Did you see Roy Keane going fucking bananas about that this week? About Jordan Henderson, the England football. Well, what's he going to do off the pitch? What's he going to do? Organise a game of cards? Have a sing song? What exactly is he going to do?
I mean, he's got a very good point. But yes, back to that Wales squad. It's as you'd expect. Ryan Elias somehow still there. No Reece Carey. Which I think is a sort of...
Says a lot of that, doesn't it?
He's picked all three loose heads from the Ospreys, including the one I genuinely don't think is very good. But he hasn't picked anyone from the Cardiff, including any of the first choice, quite highly talented ones. So, yeah.
Forwards look all right, actually.
Forwards look fine.
Looks all right, I think.
Tame Basham's an interesting pick. Ben Carter's an interesting pick as uncapped players. Everything else, I mean, like, you look at that back row and you think, really, you know, between both them, Moriarty, Navidi, and Wainwright, that's all you need. You don't need anybody else.
Do they play in Japan and somebody else yet?
No, we're just playing Canada and Argentina twice.
All right. Is it Japan in the autumn? Is that what I'm getting mixed up?
Yes, maybe.
It probably isn't Japan at all. I've probably got it completely wrong.
Maybe. Who can keep track of this? But Ben Thomas, obviously, and Tom Rogers coming in the backs. Ben Thomas is interesting because, I mean, he's literally only really been good for about three or four games. But Wales are obviously so desperate for some sort of centre.
But why not, though?
Exactly.
In tours like this, why not?
Give him a game against Canada, you know? In the same way that Rodri Williams has been picked for the first time in about 7 million years, because why not?
I do like, you got to love Sheedy and Evans as the two out half options. That's fucking...
Indeed. I mean,
bling, bing, bing all the way,
is,
isn't it?
That is showing nothing but, and you know, a Kieran Thomas, Rodri, three scrum halves. It's just like, none of those are sensible, really. Kieran Hardy's the closest they've got to sensible there, and he's not that sensible.
I like Rodri Williams. I'd love to see him get a few runs out.
I've always liked Rodri Williams. Me too.
But I mean, you forget Harper, he's still in there.
Yeah, you can see that there's a test team for Canada and there's a test team for Argentina in this.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah,
and I would imagine that Josh Turnbull will feature as the sort of sensible old head in the Canada one. And then for the two Argentina tests, he'll go, let's stop being silly. And presuming that Josh Navidi hasn't been called up to the Lions for this point, then we'll go Moriarty Navini way.
There is always that, of course, isn't there? That's, lurking.
Indeed.
So there we go. That's the squads. Glasgow have done an X Factor style boot camp.
They've booted every fucker out of there.
They kind of went, right, you want to read out your name, step forward. One of them one.
It really was. But when they read out like most of the squad.
Yeah, 16 people in total, including your so club legend, Chris Fusaro.
Indeed. It's a lot of players to leave one squad at one time. But I guess it sort of shows that Danny Wilson has taken a look at the sort of old heads in the squad and gone, nah, you're all right. They haven't signed that many players either, which leads you. I do think there will be a lot of those. You can look around the league in the Pro 14 actually and see that quite like pretty much everybody is planning on running a pretty small squad next season because they expanded the squads over the last couple of years because of Lions and COVID and the World Cup. I do really feel like they're going to reduce the squad. Like most teams are going to run with quite smaller squad sizes comparatively, especially because we don't know what format the Pro 16 is going to take, but there's talk that there will be less.
And they've all got about £13.60 in the bank.
Well, there's that as well. Yeah.
They're all like turning couches over in like the lounges and everything to see if they can find any more money right now.
Well, exactly. Most of Celtic rugby and most of sort of club rugby full stop is being funded by the government on low interest loan at the moment. So, you know, fair enough that they're kind of not going mad with it.
Any other news?
Charles Olivon has done his ACL, which is
a gutter this.
For him. Yeah, he did it for Toulon on the weekend. So he'll miss, obviously, France. He was always going to be rested for France's summer tests, quite cruelly. So that was the last game of the season on the weekend. And he did his fucking ACL, the poor bastard. Still, shit. Yeah, very shit. Brilliant player. Still, France are, you know, light on back rowers at the moment, so I don't know who's going to replace him.
Josh Turnbull?
That's the thing. Josh Turnbull would never get called up in France. Is Josh what's the sort of... Is Josh Turnbull sort of like the Goujon of...
Josh Turnbull is the Damien Shuley of Welsh rugby.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with that.
Except
Shuley
got way more caps.
Way, way more caps.
The only time you ever heard his name ever in a game was when they said, I'm replacing Damien Shuley. Is you're like, what? Has he been on for 65 minutes? He gets through a lot of unseen work. No, he doesn't. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't do any work of any kind that's useful.
I tell you what, though. This does, you know, it's an outside bet, but it does mean that there's a chance that everyone's favourite, unbelievably handsome, open side flanker, Kevin Gourdon, might find a way of squeaking himself back into the French setup.
Well, he's 33, isn't he?
He's 31. Surely.
Well, well, yeah, 31. Even more
a
reason.
Spring chicken.
Yes. So that's shit news.
It is shit.
Wound me right on that.
France will be fine, I'm sure.
Shall we talk about Ye Weekend?
Yes, we probably should.
Before we do
that,
we're just going to say goodbye to our non-patron listeners.
Oh, goodbye, patron listeners.
See you, everybody.
Non-patron listeners. Bye.
Bye.
Acast recommends podcasts we love.
Changemakers is a new podcast series with me, Claire McKenna, talking to people who stand up, speak out, or challenge us to think a little differently.
It's about the greater good, families and children, respecting their own individuality.
In the next couple of years, like, I hope I never have to have conversations about racism ever again. Like, I just want to get to the stage where, you know, people are just people.
Nobody's pooling the resources together and actually being able to show how much of an impact it will make when people do come together.
Changemakers with Claire McKenna. Search for it now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast is home to the world's best podcasts, including the David McWilliams podcast, I'm Grandmam, and the one you're listening to right now.
You know, you are all there, everyone.
You were all there. We now welcome back our non-patron listeners, as we've done the weekend, to talk about the shit good ratings, which you all very lovingly send us in and submit to us each week. Thank you very much.
Indeed.
Have you got anything shit-wise, Josh, that you want to raise?
Shit is... Well, I've got quite a few, actually. No, I haven't. Shit, I'll tell you what. The Championship Final broadcast fiasco is my shit for this week. Just showing how little rugby cares about its fans, right? It's bad enough that you need to subscribe to like four different pay TV channels to watch all the rugby in the world these days. But the Championship have taken the piss to a new level by selling the first leg of the playoff between Ealing and Saracens to Premier Sports and then the second leg to BT. I mean, fucking like.
I mean, it's weird that the we were saying, weren't we, last autumn, that people were kicking off because it was gone on Amazon.
Yeah.
And we were saying, well, actually, if you don't want to pay £7 to watch an entire month's international rugby, then what's wrong with you?
Mm. Agree. And I still stand by that.
Yeah, and I think it's trying to pull out what's the difference, I suppose. It's when they're just sort of saying, actually, there's a tournament on, you'll have to pay for 1 month of it. I think that's different to saying, actually, to watch the rugby over an 8 month period, you will need five different subscriptions. That's when it starts to get problematic. It's the missed opportunity thing, isn't it, the point you make?
Yeah, I think I sort of totted it up a couple of weeks ago as to how much it would cost, not including fucking paying for rugby pass or whatever. But I think it was something like, you know, to get... It was 80 or 90 quid a month just to watch, to make sure that you can watch all the internationals and all the sort of European games. 80 quid. Like, you can say, oh, well, you get a lot of different, you know, you got a lot of other sport in that. And you do. Yeah. And if you like a lot of sport, it's, you know, it's kind of maybe worth it. But fucking hell. Like, if you're just somebody that wants to watch rugby and you think, well, I don't want to, you know, why the fuck do I want to subscribe to Premier Sports, even if it's only 10 quid a month? If it's all it's got is the top fucking Pro 14. I don't want to watch fucking Speedway. You know, I don't care about Italian or Spanish football. And once again, sports teams just treat their fans as sort of just like commodities for television companies to squeeze money out of.
Them, is it?
No, it's not. It's terrible for these.
The rugby isn't the big draw for these subscriptions, isn't it? That's not what they charge.
We're a value add. We're a fucking, you know, rugby is not.
You think the sport could make more money by packaging it up and selling it, or could it? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
I'm
out of my element, I'll be honest. But
as I think I said, you know, if somebody charged 30, 40 quid a month just for a rugby TV channel that had everything, including all the domestic leagues from all over the world, all the internationals and everything, I think they could make a hell of a lot more money out of that than they do as a sport than they do from sort of flogging themselves to BT and Sky and, you know, Premier Sports and Amazon and whoever in these sort of little bits and chunks here and there, like combine, commodify. Surely that was the whole point of this CVC thing, was that they were going to bang heads together and go, look, lads, you need to sell yourself as one, you know, joined up sporting whole, not just as sort of the Premiership looking after the Premiership and the Pro 14 looking after the Pro 14 and the Six Nations looking after the Six Nations. Like, surely the sensible thing you do then is you go, hey, we're a sport. You can get all of you. You can have an entire sport and put it on a channel, Sky, BT, whoever the fuck, and that will be the whole channel, and people will pay a premium for that channel. Like, it seems so fucking obvious. It's baffling to me that it's still not happened.
I'm thinking it's because probably something to do with broadcasting licenses, literally, as in terms of telebroadcasting, as opposed to streaming. And I think that we've not quite reached the tipping point where enough people are comfortable with streaming working the same way as the telly does.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You can literally, you know, like with Sky, you're plugged into your dish and all that stuff.
Mm.
And I know that most things do stream as well now. I don't think that the market, the people in it, it's reached that tipping point yet. You can't be long off, though.
No, well, the thing is, Sky, like, there was a lot of talk sort of about 6 months ago that Sky wanted to sort of back up its Lions coverage this year by creating a Sky Rugby channel that would have...
Occasionally. They've got that many sports channels, they just rename one.
They just rebrand them,
for a period of time, don't they?
Yeah, but you know how F1 and golf are all, and football are always F1, golf and football on Sky because they basically have bought the whole sports in those cases. Like, they wanted to do that. They wanted the Pro 14. They wanted the Premiership. They wanted European rugby. Oh, yeah, and they wanted...
It was
widely tempted.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
And from what it seems, BT asked for too much... the Premiership wanted too much money. And so Sky pulled out. And then they ended up going for the same money that they're currently on back to BT. And Sky didn't, obviously, then had no interest in a channel that just has a fucking Pro 14 and the Lions on it. And so everybody's just staying with what they're at. And I think the Six Nations was sort of mentioned as a potential thing that would end up there as well. But, you know, and that makes sense because you look at how many people subscribe to Sky one way or another, you know, whether it's through Now TV or whatever. Like, they've just got a Sky. They would just have a, you know, I want to subscribe to Sky Sports Rugby. Okay, that'll be, you know, $19.99 a month or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just think... why that hasn't happened, why CVC have sort of stood idly by and allowed it to happen. You wonder if they're fucking tearing their hair out. Because so much of what that one interview, that one guy from CVC did with Rugby World after they bought into the Premiership, everything that he said was basically about synergizing everything and sort of packaging things up and making it more saleable. And they've just not done that at all. And it pisses me off. Anyway...
so, it was shite, though, that they've...
it was shite.
They've reached the fucking crucible. They've reached the crucible of it now by...
yeah, we're having different legs of the same fucking fixture, effectively, on different channels. Different pay TV channels. Mad stuff.
But, however, you wouldn't mind paying for the possibility of Saracens not being promoted, would you?
I was going to say, I mean, if Ealing have got a healthy lead after that first leg, I am definitely watching the second leg.
Chucking some wedge in that direction, yeah. What else we got that shit? Reese not gets in touch. He said, shit is people who don't deliver gravel on time. Yes, correct, Reese. And I'm loving the fact that listeners are feeling my pain. Matt Merritt gets in touch. He said, shit is that second half on London Irish. Seriously lacking in leadership. He said, but the first half, sublime stuff, that's the London Irish Wasps game, isn't it? That was, again, a comedy finish, unless you were a London Irish fan.
Yes.
He said, Matt says that good, though, is the first half, sublime stuff, showing what the squad is capable of. Even better, I can enjoy it in the stands with a pint. Lovely, he says, yes. Jamie Phillips, we've already done that one. Adam Reese has put something in good. I've put Adam Reese's good in shit. I don't know why I've done that, but I'll read it out because I'm here. He says, good is Josh Turnbull being added to the Wales squad. He said, I'd rather see Jack Morgan, but it's worth it just to see our Josh's on the pod's reaction to it. I think you've already heard it, Adam.
Yeah, you have.
Cardiff back row, Josh Turnbull.
please, Blues. Blues.
Oh, sorry. Yes, yes. Joe Tarin gets in touch. He says, shit is Faf de Klerk. It's some going... in such a comfortable win, to have 0 metres made, 0 defenders beaten, 0 tackles, 3 missed, 2 turnovers conceded, 1 penalty conceded, and a yellow card that turned out to be the end of his day after 50-odd minutes. Jesus, that still, is bad.
It's good to see he's going to the Lions tour.
See, you know, I love that. Well, if you're going to pick me, this is what you're getting.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk to every ruck and just fling the fucking ball away. I don't even care where it goes.
Or Faf has sensibly gone, we're not going to win the Premiership this year. I'm just going to phone this in and keep my body safe until that
second,
lies to...
They've got a chance of second place, haven't they?
They have.
An outside
they've got, chance. They've got Exeter at home, I think, next week, which is, weirdly, the only interesting game left in this Premiership season, I think.
Oof. Might make you feel unclean.
Doesn't it?
Now then, what have we got? Else we got here. Dave Price gets in touch. He says, shit is captain's challenges. Time delay and finding the right footage makes it clumsy and unwieldy. That's not the only reason, Dave.
No.
The whole idea is a fucking pointless waste of time.
It's an absolute catastrophe, isn't it?
Miles Burley gets in touch. He says that shit is Worcester.
Mm.
One non-COVID win all season and conceding a maul try from 23 metres and then substituted their entire front row after 27 minutes. An utter shambles from their management. Yeah, but I mean, you've got to love shit like that, haven't you? Competency is not what entertains anyone. Let's be honest.
Absolutely not.
As this podcast has demonstrated for the past five and a half years, Josh. Christ.
Can you imagine that we would still be doing this?
No.
5.5 years hence.
But here we are. And here you lot are. So it's your fault because you keep listening. It is,
to be fair, yeah.
Any more shits from you, Josh?
I tell you what, shit is Wayne Pivac touting young Dragon's Lock Ben Carter as Alan Wynne-Jones' successor. I mean, look, I could write a list as long as my arm of players who've been given that tag by the press in the last few years and haven't lived up to it. But fucking hell, for the Wales coach to do it to an uncapped 20-year-old kid with 19 professional appearances under his belt is... I mean, what's he going to do with that? What's he supposed to do? Oh, yeah, I'm the next Alan Jones, me. Never played a game for Wales. But
when you say that, what's a journalist going to ask you every time they speak 100%, to you after that?
Yeah.
And it's like, this isn't my fault. I didn't give myself this name.
No. And you can understand, you know, if journalists do it, because journalists are prone to do that sort of thing. But for the Wales coach to do it, that adds a certain...
But then adds more fire to journalists asking it, because what your coach says that...
Yeah, and it adds, you know, authority and gravitas to it, because it's the bloody coach of Wales saying it. It's just fucking hell, poor kid.
What else we got that's good? That's the old shit, says you got any more?
I think it is, yeah, no.
Good wise. Sir Wayne Shelford.
Yeah.
This week. I'm not sure where I stand on the whole honours thing. However, no. If there are honours to be given out, it seems fair dues that...
Give them to people like that.
The Bucks should get one.
Absolutely.
Taught them how to do the hacker properly, things like that, you know?
Yeah. Fair play.
Any goods from you?
I mean, he shouldn't have been in with a mile of that game, but Dan Biggar was fucking unbelievably good, even though he shouldn't have been there and I didn't want him to be there, and every time he ran into contact, I went.
Josh would like you all
God,
to understand
he was good.
That he should not have been there.
He should never have been there, but fuck me, he was outstandingly good, right up until the moment he got injured. Which he got injured in the process of setting up a try, which is just, yeah, epic.
Well, I've got a good ear. David Quarrell gets in touch. He says, good is vest weather. The singlets, he says. It's set for the next 2 weeks, this vest weather as
I
well.
I know, I'm really excited.
I'm thinking of taking the plunge. I've resisted the vest up to this point, but I saw someone out in a sink in a Lions training singlet in Harrogate, obviously.
Obviously.
And I thought, you know what? I reckon I can pull that off.
Yeah, honestly, it just requires a certain level of not giving a fuck. It's like, you know that you don't look like fucking Sam Warburton in this, and you never will. But, you know, it's warm out, and sometimes you just got to let it free.
I'm saying this to myself, and I think I think we should all say this to ourselves, really, is that instead of wasting all your emotional energy worrying about how many carbohydrates you're eating, spend all that time telling yourself you look fucking belting.
Hell yeah.
At all times.
Damn straight.
Let the word go forth from here. I can't see all of you, but I know for a fact you all look fucking belting. So
absolutely.
Good on you.
Speaking of people who absolutely do look sort of objectively and unequivocally stunning, Sebi Randranda.
You can't get enough of Semi with no top on, can you?
I'll tell you what, he's a beautiful fucking man. Fiji are apparently going to fly him on a private plane from Bristol directly to Tokyo because they're so desperate to have him involved in the Olympics. I mean, who doesn't want to see Semi play for that Fijian Olympic Sevens team? Let's be real here.
And they're looking to follow up on their
gold medal
from last time, aren't they?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, because the Olympics start I'm not sure when the tournament actually kicks off for the sevens.
I've got no idea.
The Twickenham finals June 26th, right? So let's have a look when. Basically, there's not a lot of.
I can't wait for having Clive Woodward with his pearls of fucking wisdom about men's and women's sevens.
How bad was that? Oh, see, it doesn't take place till the 26th of July, but presumably he's got to get to some sort of tournament. But basically, they've gone, whatever it takes, we will get Semi on a fucking plane, and he will be there and we will be playing. I think they might have this. Oh, the Oceania Sevens tournament. They want to get him, which is the last tournament before the Olympics.
Now, why wouldn't you?
Fucking why wouldn't you? Put Chuck Semmy fucking into that team. That's already the best, you know, probably the best team in the world. And just go, yeah, let's stick a massive lump. We can do absolutely anything you want with the rugby ball in there.
Do you remember how much they fucking hammered Great Britain in that final?
It was an absolute prison shaming.
Pasting it was on every single level.
And I couldn't help but want it to be that. Like, Britain didn't need a gold medal for the Olympic Sevens. Yeah. Silver was absolutely enough.
Yeah, I wanted Fiji to win. It was like, because of all the things they are absolutely genuinely the best in the world at, it's this.
Yeah.
And they should win a gold medal in it at the first chance of it happening.
And lo and behold, they absolutely demonstrated that they were, by a very long way, the best team.
And then, they all got on their knees so Princess Margaret could put the medals around them.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
I mean, the optics to that on reflection are not great. But, yeah.
But I think from their point of view, it was just a mark of respect for what they saw as an old lady. I think it's simple as that.
Which was lovely.
I don't think it was a royalty thing. Yeah. It was just like, oh, actually, no, we'll help you out here, love.
I was just checking what the final score was in that game. And, oof, it was a pasting. It was 43-7 in the end, which for a gold medal match,
it really did.
I mean, it's worth remembering that Britain's route to the semi-final, to the final, was beating Argentina 5-0 after extra time, and then beating South Africa 7-5 in the semi. It's not like they were exactly a free-flowing...
Corby Boy was in that team, wasn't he?
Yeah, they basically used James Davis and Sam Cross as playing like proper open-side flankers who were just making every breakdown a fucking nightmare.
Was Matt Scott in that team? Was it Alex Dunbar? One of the Scottish centres was, wasn't he?
Maybe. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at the squads. There's got to be a squad here. Mark Bennett was in it.
Mark Bennett, that's it.
Yeah, Sam Cross, James Davis... Rory McConaughey was in there.
Wow.
Yeah. James Rodwell, Marcus Watson, Dan Norton, obviously, Phil Burgess, Dan Bibby, Ollie Lindsay-Haig.
Dan Bibby, yes.
Fucking hell.
I love the fucking classic Sevens people.
Indeed. There's going to be a lot more of those. Because it was it. Oh, yeah, Tip Scott was in his sort of concussion bad period then, which is why Tipperick didn't end up joining up with that squad. But God, can you imagine Tipperick at the Olympics? Yeah, it's a shame that if the Olympics hadn't been put back a year, I wonder if Tips would have had a go at the squad last. If the Olympics had happened in 2020, I wonder if he'd have had a go. Because he went to the Commonwealth Games a couple of years ago, just for a laugh. And Wales were shit and he came home. But... just imagine him playing sevens with Semi. Oof.
What else we got was good.
Anyway.
Yes. Will Owen gets in touch. He says, good is Dan Bigger stealing lineouts.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. He did everything.
He says that shit, though, is any Lions player going anywhere near contact at any point during any game 100%. Ever right now.
Jesus Christ.
Dan Shears gets in touch. He says, good was the end of the Tigers-Bristol game. It was great to see passion, blood and thunder in the front of the returning fans. Rugby values and sanitised media comment have their place, but that finish was everything I've missed over the last 15 months. You know what, Dan? Whatever you think of the rights and wrongs of it, in the outcome, I mean, you have to agree with that. It was a fucking brilliant
100%.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Andy Hunt says, on the similar subject, says, good is... as an outsider watching the end of the Tigers-Bristol game, the drama and comedy was all rolled into one, yes. He said, however, my Tigers supporting mate after the game did say something like, fucking shit, fucking rugby, I hate it, yes. Well, he should just take solace in the fact that we all hate his team.
Preach.
Andy. So, Graham Golvin gets in touch. He says, good is Adam Hastings rolling up and smoking all that glorious Leinster shithousing with a huge grin on his face. He does seem to wind people up, doesn't he?
He's got a shit-eating grin. There's no doubt about that.
Did you watch the Friends reunion?
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Another team.
It's more interesting than rugby anyway.
With the team.
Yes.
Matt Perry, he's ravaged by his addictions. Poor fella. But and so looks awful.
He does. He
but
really does.
But somehow looks even more awful because he's got the gigantic fucking tombstone plastic teeth.
Yeah, his teeth look weird. Like it's like everyone, obviously everyone in that room, especially James Corden, has had work done.
I don't want to be all, you know, gender and patriarchy here, but I mean, Courtney Cox's face is remarkable.
Mm. All of their faces.
Who's in particular, though? I mean, they've all had a bit of done, haven't they? Apart from Joey.
Apart from,
who's
Matt LeBlanc just doesn't give a fuck. David Schwimmer, to be fair to him, even though he's clearly had a bit of work done, still broadly looks like he did when he was in Friends.
Yeah. And Lisa Kudrow, he's obviously just gone and lived in a big house somewhere.
Yeah. Matthew Perry, I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, there's a lot going on there. There's, you know, they always have too much done to their eyes. Have you noticed that?
I think it's like, one of those things that once you start,
you can't stop.
There's always something you can be doing till you end up, everyone just looks like a melted candle, basically.
Yeah, Matthew Perry is, he just looks like a sort of terrifying ventriloquist dummy, you know? He has that
Matt LeBlanc so much. He was just like, yeah, I was in that thing. It was ace, wasn't it? I've not done much since, but, you know, fuck it. You know, I'm having a good time. I put a bit of weight on. Everything's fine.
And he's, you know, arguably, you know, Matt LeBlanc has done more interesting stuff than, you know, he did that thing, what was it called, Episodes?
Yes. And he won, like, a weird version of himself.
Yeah, and he won, like, Emmys and Golden Globes for that, I think. Like,
He
did Joey, which was critically panned, but it always was
good. Which he actually did take the piss out of himself for on the show as well, which I quite like.
I mean, he also, do you remember when he was in the Lost in Space remake in the late 90s? That was fucking terrible. but yeah, you know, he was on Top Gear for a while for some reason, you know.
That was very bizarre.
it's all very strange, but you know, he's a man, a 50-year-old man, entirely comfortable in his own skin, who probably did an awful lot of shagging in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Got it right out of his system and was like, well, you know, I'm just going to just grow old like a normal person now. Whereas everybody else in that group seems to be desperately clinging on to something.
Apart from Lisa Kudrow, I will say that.
Yeah, apart from Lisa Kudrow, who is just like,
Anyway, yeah, so, but it was a bit, what did you think of it? I found myself cringing in some bits and really liking other bits.
I hated everything that wasn't the cast.
Yes, Corden bits, basically.
The Corden bits made me want to just, I mean, every time
the weird people from around the world saying I like
weird people from around the world was weird. Every time Corden opened his mouth, I just wanted to punch him until he stopped.
But them just having a chat and doing the script reading.
Them just having a chat was genuinely very, and even when, like, even though the bits where they were doing the table reads of the scripts.
Yeah, I quite like that. Yeah.
Was quite, even though it was quite sort of hokey, it sort of reminded you that
they
were
proper, didn't they?
They did it. They actually did a proper table read, and it was interesting to see them as sort of comedic performers again, because they're so branded now. They're, you know, they are Jennifer Aniston or David Schwimmer or, you know, Courtney Cox or whoever. It was nice seeing them sort of go back into that. Yeah, I thought I weirdly found it quite enjoyable.
Yeah, because I 5 minutes in, I thought this is going to be fucking appalling, and then it actually kind of
Rachel wanted to watch it, and I was like, oh, seriously, James Corden talking
we're
to
watching
the
it,
of
and
catch.
And you're not allowed to speak at any point.
Basically, yes,
and be snippy about it. Yeah.
Yes, and I was just like, James fucking Corden, I've got to be snippy at some point. It's like, okay, you can be snippy about James Corden, but nothing else.
I don't despise Corden in a way other people do, but then really again, I don't particularly want to watch him much either. So.
No, I mean, I just resent his success because I just don't, like, I think he's the luckiest man who's ever lived because I just think...
Him and Mick fucking Fleetwood.
Him and Mick fucking Fleetwood, indeed. It's like, I don't understand how he's ended up where he is on being unbelievably not that funny and from one thing I once heard about somebody who'd worked with him, an absolute twat.
Oh. So, see, you know, he doesn't play that role, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Anyway, sorry, slight diverge. Yeah. That was, what did we start about? That was teeth. Adam Hastings' teeth started that.
Yeah, shit-eating grin. Loves it, though.
Phil Jones gets in touch. He said, good. He said, I'm slightly late to the party, I know. He said, but I went to Welford Road. Oh, you're not giving it his full title, though, Phil?
No. Oh, God, that was awful.
What are they calling it? I've read that about four times today.
It's called. It's officially called Matoli Woods Welford Road, but nobody with a soul calls it that. except for, weirdly, Nemani Nadolo.
Hello, who, the poor sod.
Who fucking, for some reason, when he did a tweet after the game.
It was his first game in front of the crowd, wasn't it?
His first game in front of the crowd at Welford Road, which is great. And he said, I've only ever watched Matoli Woods Welford Road roar like that on TV and YouTube, but to experience it live and have my wee fella in the stands for the first time is something I'll never forget.
It just rolls off the tongue so naturally, doesn't it?
I mean, what? Like, just, just no. Stop. Like, stop enabling this stuff. Stop enabling the sort of rebadging of some of, you know, the most sort of storied grounds in the history of sports by allowing, you know, just totally. Remember when it was BT Sport with the BT Arms Park or whatever it was a few years ago when BT basically.
BT Murray
bought,
Field? It's still that, isn't it?
Still is, yeah. But like when BT bought off the Welsh regions with various chunks of money to get them to support the Champions Cup for a couple of seasons. And the Arms Park was the BT, or the BT Sport Arms Park for a couple of years. And like, no, it's Cardiff Arms Park.
You're not far
it's
off
Welford
the,
Road.
You're not far off the Castleford situation where their...
No, exactly.
Where their ground became the jungle because they're Castleford Tigers. And then they got a sponsorship deal, so they started... So their traditional name went out the window and they were playing at the Menderhose Jungle. Which you have to admit is... Well, it's absolutely spectacular.
We've discussed this. We have discussed this before, but there are some properly brilliant, or there have been some properly...
St. Helens is ground, then.
That's the Totally Wicked Stadium, is what they're called. Yeah. One of them was named after a vape juice for a while. I can't remember which one it was. Like, I can't remember.
It's Totally Wicked vape, or is that...
Maybe Totally Wicked is vape. But I do remember one of their stadiums was named after vape juice. And, yeah, weirdly, like all of the sort of awful team names, a couple of years ago, everyone in the Super League seemed to have a hilariously awful name for their stadium that they'd sold. But now it's just like Headingley.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, DW. Lee's just, Lee can't get a fuck. They've got Lee Sports Village, we are. And that classic built and owned by the council because nobody will invest in a stadium. The council just has to build it.
I mean, I'm trying to work out what Totally Wicked is.
I'm pretty sure it's vape. I've seen it in the garage, I think, when I've been in to pay for me petrol.
Yeah, Totally Wicked is one of the leading vape companies in the UK.
I mean,
Christ. It's rugby very league rugby league, league, isn't it?
It used to be sponsored by John Smith's and they've just moved on to something else now that there's...
I'm here for it, though. I'm absolutely here for, as we've discussed, you know, sports knowing their level.
I went to the Challenge Cup a number of times, and you forget how much fags were just... For years, everywhere. It was the Silk Cut Challenge Cup.
Mm.
That was Rugby League's big day out, was the Silk Cut Challenge Cup. And then the other big cup competition was the Regal Trophy. Not to do, not as in Embassy Regal and Embassy number 10, you know.
Well, I do think that sort of... Particularly sports that are more aimed at working class audiences really struggled once they stopped allowing
which just became
so
gambling,
much booze. Yeah, so much booze and fags that it all became gambling in football. But then minority sports can't even attract the gambling.
They're just into vapes and free pizza. That's all they can do. Right, sorry, Phil, I didn't finish your thing. So he said, I'm slightly late to the party, but I went to the... correctly named, Phil, Welford Road.
Yeah.
For the first time in 462 days on Saturday, and it was bloody marvellous. He said, I can't stand smoke on the water. Okay, that's slightly random. He said, I reckon the Tigers should still run out to Mudd's Tiger Feet. But even that sounding... I see. They run out to smoke on the water now, do they? Yeah, tiger feet would be much better.
I mean, it makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
It makes a lot more sense as well. Yeah, so there you go. Thank you, Phil, and good for you. It's great for people going out to grounds.
Honestly, really I'm very jealous of you all.
And hearing it as well is a hell of a thing.
It is. It's weird, like, because you've got so used to the processed crowd noise and the canned crowd noise being slightly shit. When a crowd actually reacts organically to something, even though it's a very small crowd, it just feels fucking proper. And it's like, oh.
Apart from England football fans, a significant chunk of them kneeling for booing people kneeling.
I mean,
that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that could get fucked.
Laura, speaking of on a similar level, Laura Soros gets in touch. She says that good is Kyle Singler getting his Lions call up, although it is obviously shit for Andrew Porter. Yeah, yes. She said that good was Exeter's comeback in the second half versus Northampton. No, it wasn't, Laura. We've already established that because it was against 14 men and Exeter are the baddies.
Yeah.
She said, but shit is, as always, Exeter's fucking branding. Why don't they just change it? Yes, all right. She said that. It wasn't us. Laura said that. We're not bringing it up.
I tell you what, we need to kind of like separate the two branches of hate for Exeter.
Yeah, that's true.
There's the normal branch of hate, which is Exeter are a really fucking good team and they win everything all the time.
Yeah, they're like Leicester, so we don't like them.
Yeah, either. Yeah. As you know, they're like Leinster, like any, you know, like Saracens were before everybody found that they were naughty cheats. You can see it starting to happen a bit with Bristol, you know, Leicester and Wasps back in the day. People hate you because you're good. That is a perfectly normal every.
They want you to stop winning and they dislike you because you keep doing it. Yes,
And that is a normal level of hate. There is also the the other stuff with Exeter, which is a different strand and is more problematic. Well, it's not more problematic. The reason that we dislike them is more serious than just they're very good.
Yeah.
And you've got to enjoy both of those strands of hate independently, I think.
Fair dues.
Indeed.
Rob Sutton gets in touch and he says that good is the Brentford Community Stadium. A wonderful place to watch rugby, a decent location, good banter. Ooh, Rob. Good banter between the two sets of supporters and some atmosphere because there's only 4,000 allowed in. And of course, that stadium will host Premier League football.
It will indeed.
Next year, after Brentford FC got themselves into the top division for the first time in 60-something years.
I tell you what's weird about that new Brentford stadium, right, is whenever they do a wide shot, and if you've ever, you know, if, as many of us will have, you've driven into London a lot on the M4.
Yes.
You'll go, oh, it's there, is it? And you can see it's cars really coming down the A4 on
it's really
the flyover.
It's like proper West London.
It's literally in the shadow of the A4 flyover as you come off the M4 into London, down past the Lucasaid factory and all that. It's properly
and
there.
Past Grenfell.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that stretch of the M4 and the A4 because everything along it was built from the 1930s onwards.
Yes.
So you've got some fucking blinding Art Deco buildings all down that street.
I'm a big fan
of Art Deco.
Oh, me too. I love sort of, particularly on the sort of left-hand side as you're coming in, you see all those old factories and headquarters. The Hoover building. The old Lucasaid building that still has the neon, used to have the little neon Lucasaid bottle on it back in the day. I don't know if it still does.
You know, the building next to the Hoover building, which is the old canteen block, has got a higher graded rating than the Hoover building.
Really?
Yeah.
Christ.
It's the canteen block next to it, which is the most, which is mega. Well, they're all pretty special, but I love all that stuff.
Yeah,
Sega's UK headquarters were down there.
Yes, used to have a big Sonic the Hedgehog on the side of the building. Yeah. I remember that when I was a kid. Yeah. Ugh, takes me back.
So, yeah, but Brentford's not far from where my mother-in-law lives.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, you see, I'm winding my brother-in-law up because he should support either QPR or Brentford, but he doesn't. He supports Tottenham.
See, that's not West London, is it?
Absolutely not. No.
It also has. You also quite have, in a sort of slightly modern twist, though. You also have those weird posh car dealerships along the side of the M4 well, where they've just got like loads of Mercs in a big car lift down the side of the building. You just think, how do you get, when you're a kid, you're like, how did they go in there?
You're never away from a shocking amount of money in London.
Oh, goodness.
Especially
no.
These days.
Right. When I was a kid, I always used to think, how did they get the cars up there?
Oh, I love
but, I mean, obviously there's a lift. There's a fucking lift. But I mean, I wasn't, clearly wasn't looking that hard. Anyway, yes.
So thank you, Rob. 10 Ep gets in touch. He says, God, is it Cardiff or just Cardiff again?
Yes.
We don't care. I don't.
There'll always be the Blues to me now.
Hey, well, what is good as a result of it, Josh? I imagine, which is right up your Strasse,
mm-hmm.
right up your heel, if you will, is that they've got 50% off all Cardiff Blues gear. Well, of course not. It's no good for you, is it? Because you can't wear it.
I can't wear
it,
no.
Burn your
although
skin
I might, although I might wear it, just to annoy people.
Just to wind Cardiff fans up. Just to love
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
And then finally, Bez in Space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the actual one. Says, good is the six world-class locks that the Springboks have selected for the Lions Tour.
Yeah, and only one of them's burned his face off.
Honestly, that's got to... Imagine how many journalists are trying to get the scoop on that now. What the fucking hell's actually happened?
TBC, we'll see.
I bet Tom will know from Three Red Kings.
He'll know. He'll know.
Right, that's all, I think.
I think it is.
Thank you very much, everybody. Nice to be back.
Indeed.
Thank you,
good
Josh.
To have you, as
Speak
always.
To you all soon. Ta-da!
Take care. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. They've designed must-have travel styles for when you need to jet. The lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit makes these shoes some of the most packable styles ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Take the Superlight Tree Runner on your next adventure. Its cushy, lightweight foam midsole supports every step, and the extra outsole traction gives you the grip to just go for it. The eucalyptus fiber upper adds next-level breathability to keep you going all day. Plus, the Superlight Tree Runner is comfortable and ready to go right out of the box. So, what can you do in a Superlight shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.